Hey y'all, it's Rachel from Smarter Teaching, here to share a latte and give you all the tools you'll need to work smarter, not harder, in your classroom.
Hey readers, I'm back with another Third Thursday. I totally missed September completely because I started subbing and back in the classroom again. So it's been a moderately rocky transition, but I sort of feel like I'm a little bit more back in a routine now. But it was definitely a rocky road to work out school drop-off, school pickup, me working, my husband working, walking our dog, soccer practice in the fall, speech, sessions for our kids. It was just like it went from 0 to 100 really quickly, and it took us a while to adjust. So I didn't get anything done in September. But I have a bunch of books to review today, so stay tuned. I read a bunch of different books this past month, well, I guess over the past 2 months, and a couple historical fiction and a couple like mystery / thriller, and then one book that had just popped up over and over again in a Facebook group that I participate in called All the Ugly and Wonderful Things. And I didn't really know a lot about it, but it had popped up a couple times and people seemed to enjoy it, so I just requested it from the library. It came up this month and I read it. On Goodreads, it has just over a 4-star review, and here is the official Goodreads summary. As the daughter of a meth dealer, Weavy knows not to trust people, not even her own parents. Struggling to raise her little brother, 8-year-old Weavy is the only responsible adult around. She finds peace in the starry Midwestern night sky above the fields behind her house. One night, everything changes when she witnesses one of her father's thugs, Kellen, a tattooed ex-con with a heart of gold, wreck his motorcycle. What follows is a powerful and shocking love story between two unlikely people that asks tough questions, reminding us of all the ugly and wonderful things that life has to offer. So, like I said, I read All the Ugly and Wonderful Things, not really knowing anything about it. And if I had known more, it's likely I would have passed. The main character, Weavy, like the review on Goodreads mentions, is the parents, her parents are drug dealers, and the story contains a lot of not like graphic child abuse, because she's not really physically abused often, but there is a lot of neglect, and I just feel like as teachers, we deal with so much stuff already that it just wasn't like, if I had really known what this book was about, I probably would have passed on it, because I mainly read for pleasure and not like I read as not an escape, but it just felt too real and hit too close to home. Like, I don't know. It just was a really difficult book to read. Not only because of the abuse, like the abuse and neglect aspect, but because the story centers around a romantic relationship between a child and an adult. And it was just, it was just a really difficult book to read. I kept reading it because I really, really don't like to abandon books. I mean, everybody does sometimes. But the type A part of me really does not like to abandon books. So I kept plugging through. I kept chugging away. Partially because I did, even though I don't know that I would have read this book had I known what it was about, I did feel like I wanted to know what in the end happened to Weavy. And so I kept reading, even though, like I said, this book like wasn't really exactly my cup of tea. And I don't think that it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't, it was just like I said, the content of the book is really difficult. So I think that the writing wasn't bad. Like, the characters are, I don't know that endearing is really the right word, but I mean, you can connect with the characters. But like I said, like the content of the book, like the abuse, the neglect, the romantic relationship between a child and an adult, it just made it very difficult for me personally to enjoy the book. Like I said, I read the whole thing, but in the end, I only rated it 2 stars, and I hardly ever rate anything just 2 stars. I'm always like, oh, I understand what you were trying to do. Here's 3. but it was just really, really hard for me to read this book. Like I said, the romantic relationship between a child and an adult was weird, but like the abuse and neglect was what was really difficult for me, especially like it was difficult for me to read about things like that before I had kids, but even now, but it's even more so now that I have children, and I just don't understand how you could birth a child and then not care for them. But that's outside the purview of this book. So my bottom line is this book was not really for me, but if things like that don't bother you, like maybe you have a larger worldview or whatever, the writing was good. The characters are well developed. I think that you can definitely, like I said, the writing isn't bad. The characters are well developed. The content of the book was really, really difficult. I also this month read All the Missing Girls by Megan Miranda. And the Goodreads summary for All the Missing Girls is as follows. Like the spellbinding psychological suspense in The Girl on the Train and Luckiest Girl Alive, Megan Miranda's novel is a nail-biting, breathtaking story about the disappearances of 2 young women a decade apart, told in reverse. It's been 10 years since Nicolette Farrell left her rural hometown after her best friend Corinne disappeared from Coulee Ridge without a trace. Back again to tie up loose ends and care for her ailing father, Nick is soon plunged into a shocking drama that reawakens Corinne's case and breaks open old wounds long since stitched. The decade-old investigation focused on Nick, her brother Daniel, boyfriend Tyler, and Corinne's boyfriend Jackson. Since then, only Nick has left Coulee Ridge. Daniel and his wife Laura are expecting a baby, Jackson works at the town bar, and Tyler is dating Annalise Carter, Nick's younger neighbor and the group's alibi the night Corinne disappeared. Then, within days of Nick's return, Annalise goes missing. Told backwards, day 15 to day 1, from the time Annalise goes missing, Nick works to unravel the truth about her younger neighbor's disappearance, revealing shocking truths about her friends, her family, and what really happened to Corinne that night 10 years ago. Like nothing you've ever read before, All the Missing Girls delivers in all the right ways. With twists and turns that lead down dark alleys and dead ends, you may think you're walking a familiar path, but then Megan Miranda turns it all upside down and inside out and leaves us wondering just how far we would be willing to go to protect those we love. I really enjoyed All the Missing Girls. I know they mentioned it twice in the official Goodreads review, but I really enjoyed how they told the book backwards. I thought that was an interesting twist. So basically the main character, Nick, has left, I think she's moved to Philadelphia, but that's like not really essential to the plot line. And, she goes back to the town where she grew up because her dad is in like a nursing home or assisted living type situation, and they basically need to sell the house where they grew up to pay for his continued care in this facility. So that's like the premise of the whole story. She goes home to help get their house ready to sell and then to sell it. And then while she's home, this second girl goes missing, and it stirs up all these questions about the night that her friend Corinne disappeared. I just thought that the book was engaging. It's a very fast and easy read. It's a fast and easy read. So it's not, I mean, it's something that you can read on a trip and not like get bogged down in. It's told, the characters are like relatable, and I just felt like I grew up in a middle-sized town, but I felt like I could connect to like wanting to leave the place that you grew up. And I don't know, I just felt like you can, it's a story that I feel is easily relatable to. And I felt like the characters were, you could easily connect with the characters too. Like, not just the main character, Nick, but like also her brother and other people in the story, like the Jackson, who's the bartender and was dating her friend Corinne at the time. To be totally honest, guys, it's been like a month or so since I read it. So I only vaguely remember like the resolution, but it wasn't, I mean, again, as a disclaimer, I am always the worst at figuring out who the criminal is. And this really wasn't like that. It was, it wasn't like they were trying to look for like a kidnapper or a murderer or something. They were just trying to figure out what was happening with these girls. But obviously, spoiler alert, they're connected. And they unravel like the connection between these two girls and these two cases throughout the course of the book. It was a fast read. It was an easy read. It was engaging. Not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure there were a couple of nights like I didn't talk to my husband because I was just trying to finish this book. It's really good. If like thriller slash crime novel is your bag, I would definitely recommend this. It's not a super long book, but it is, like I said, I thought it was really engaging and I really enjoyed this, and it was a nice break. I'm pretty sure that I read this after All the Light We Cannot See, so it was like a nice lighter break after like a more serious and heavy novel. If it's not on your list and you're into like thriller slash crime, I would totally suggest adding it. And if you've already read it, I'd love to hear what you think. The first book that I read between August and now was All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, I'm assuming. This book won the Pulitzer Prize in 2015, and it's also won a couple other awards as well. It has 4.3 stars on Goodreads, and this is the summary. From the highly acclaimed, multiple award-winning Anthony Doerr, the stunningly beautiful instant New York Times bestseller about a blind French girl and a German boy whose paths collide in occupied France as both try to survive the devastation of World War II. Marie Laura lives in Paris near the Museum of Natural History, where her father works. When she is 12, the Nazis occupy Paris, and father and daughter flee to the walled citadel of Saint-Malo, where Marie Laura's reclusive great-uncle lives in a tall house by the sea. With them, they carry what might be the museum's most valuable and dangerous jewel. In a mining town in Germany, Werner Pfennig, an orphan, grows up with his younger sister. Enchanted by a crude radio they find that brings them news and stories from places they have never seen or imagined. Werner becomes an expert at building and fixing these crucial new instruments and is enlisted to use his talent to track down the resistance. Deftly interweaving the lives of Marie Laure and Werner, Doerr illuminates the ways, against all odds, people try to be good to one another. Okay, so All the Light We Cannot See is, like I said, it won the Pulitzer Prize in 2015, and it has also won other awards as well. It was on my radar because I really like historical fiction. I specifically generally really enjoy historical fiction centering around World War II. It had popped up a couple times in some book groups that I'm part of, and people just seem to overall enjoy it. So my honest review is that I did in the end really like it, but it took me a really long time to get into it. And to be honest, the only reason I didn't abandon it is because, as I mentioned with my first review today, I'm a little too type A to abandon books. When you start reading this book, it's not until easily halfway, if maybe not even a little bit farther than halfway through the book, that you can see that all of the stories start to wrap together. So you originally start with the story of Marie Laure, who lives in Paris with her father, and then when the Nazis occupy Paris, they leave and go to be with her great uncle. And then also there's this mining town where Werner is like a young orphan. And so for a while there's these two parallel stories continuing, and the connection is really, really unclear. So you keep reading as long as you're type A and you don't abandon it. And you do ultimately find they are connected. I started to like sort of see the connection when they introduce a third character whose name I'm totally forgetting. He's like this weird, not weird, but he's a Nazi officer, and he is hunting prized pieces of art and just like other historical artifacts that other countries had. He's like collecting them for this Reich Museum that they're intending to build that will like showcase all of the most beautiful things that like humans have ever created. So he's on the hunt for this jewel that he believes that was in the Museum of Natural History, but was when the Nazis occupied Paris, it was sent away. So like I said, it's a good book and it is really interesting, and I did really like the story, but it takes the better part of the book for all of the pieces to come together. So if you're looking for a fast and light read, this is not it. It won the Pulitzer Prize, so there's a lot of fancy prose. It's definitely, like I said, not a light or easy read, but it is a good book if you can not even slog through it, I feel is the wrong word, but it did just feel like I kept reading and nothing was happening, because things were happening in the book. I just felt like I was reading, and I was reading two parallel stories that happened to be in the same book for probably half to two-thirds of the novel. I just kept feeling like, okay, cool, like she's blind and she's in France. Okay, cool, he's fixing radios in Germany. And it just took a really long time for there to even be any crossover at all. And then once they did, I felt I had envisioned in my mind a different ending. However, the ending to the story, I mean, was not at all, was fine. I felt okay with it. It wasn't totally happy or totally sad. So I was able to kind of reconcile in that way. If historical fiction, I think that I rated this 3.5 stars just because it took, for me personally, so long for the stories to connect. Had they intertwined sooner, I probably would have given it like 4 or maybe even 4.25 stars. But like I said, I had just been so close to abandoning it so many times because I felt like I was just reading two different stories that happened to be inside the same book. So if historical fiction is your thing, specifically World War II historical fiction, this book is good and I do believe that you'll enjoy it, but it's not going to be a fast read. Like if you're looking for something to sit down and read in a day on the couch with some tea, like this is not that book. I think it took me, in fact, I actually had to turn off the Wi-Fi on my Kindle to get this book finished because I did not, in the 3 weeks that they gave me, I was reading this at the start of the school year. And in the 3 weeks that I had, I couldn't finish it. So I had waited a long time to get it off the wait list, so I just switched off the Wi-Fi to my Kindle so they wouldn't take it back from me, and finished it like a couple of days after. So the bottom line is, it is a good book, but it is not a light and easy read. And if you like historical fiction, I think that you would enjoy it. Not to bore you with more of the same, but this between August and now, I also read The Alice Network by Kate Quinn, which is also a World War II historical fiction. And this book has about 4.25 stars on Goodreads, and this is the summary. In an enthralling new historical novel from national bestselling author Kate Quinn, two women, a female spy recruited to the real-life Alice Network in France during World War I, and an unconventional American socialite searching for her cousin in 1947, are brought together in a mesmerizing story of courage and redemption. 1947. In the chaotic aftermath of World War II, American college girl Charlie St. Clair is pregnant, unmarried, and on the verge of being thrown out of her very proper family. She's also nursing a desperate hope that her beloved cousin Rose, who disappeared in Nazi-occupied France during the war, might still be alive. So when Charlie's parents banish her to Europe to save her to have her little problem taken care of, Charlie breaks free and heads to London, determined to find out what happened to the cousin she loves like a sister. 1915. A year into the Great War, Eve Gardner burns to join the fight against the Germans and unexpectedly gets her chance when she's recruited to work as a spy. Sent into enemy-occupied France, she's trained by the mesmerizing Lily, the queen of spies who manages a vast network of secret agents right under the enemy's nose. 30 years later, haunted by the betrayal that ultimately tore apart the Alice network, Eve spends her days drunk and secluded in her crumbling London house, until a young American barges in, uttering a name Eve hasn't heard in decades, and launches them both on a mission to find the truth, no matter where it leads. I also really enjoyed the Alice network. It is a much faster and easier read than All the Light We Cannot See. But it's interesting. So as the official review mentions, it's told, well, I guess the official review doesn't mention this, but it's told, both like in the present as they're in 1947, like as they're, going looking for Charlie's cousin Rose and as they're like traipsing around Europe, but then it's also told through flashback, like all of the things that happened during the First World War to Eve and like her work as a spy. So the juxtaposition was interesting and I enjoyed that. Like I liked that it wasn't just all told in the present. It was nice that they, I thought it was interesting that she, like the author also writes about these, like not necessarily flashbacks, but like she writes about the past as well. And the story, so I found the story was interesting. Like the review says, Charlie is looking for her cousin and she ultimately, she connects with Eve because as I guess Eve was working in an office and must have processed like a report about her cousin or something. And so she's the last person who has like official information about her, about Rose. So she goes to track her down. And, when like the information she got from this reporter, the office, connects to Eve, and so she, Charlie goes to see Eve when she, after she and her mom sail over to London, they sail to London. I really enjoyed the Alice Network. It's a much lighter and much easier read than All the Light We Cannot See. So if you're into historical fiction, but maybe not like getting bogged down in a more serious read, I would totally recommend the Alice Network. As the official review mentions, it's the story of two women, Charlie, Charlotte, who is searching for her cousin, who she lost contact with during the war, and then also Eve, who she tracks down basically because her name was on a report that had like the last official or the last known information about her, about Rose. So originally, like Eve is very dismissive of her and doesn't want anything to do with her, but Charlie kind of buys her in because she has some money and she's like, I'll pay you if you help me. And so they kind of start on this hunt and then through the book they connect and become like have a slightly like a friend, they build a friendship. And I felt satisfied because the story has a happy ending and that's all I ever really want in life is from like a book and a movie is a happy ending, like a positive ending. and this story had that. So I felt good about it. And actually I also really thought it was interesting because I didn't even realize until I read the epilogue that there was, in fact, during World War I, like, this ring of female spies, and the Alice Network was a real thing. I just thought it was kind of, like, a nice made-up storyline, but it turns out that it was accurate in that some of the characters in the book are, like, not based on, like, I guess kind of based on historical actors, like they're maybe compilations of several people, or she kind of took some liberties with people who actually were involved at the time. So I enjoyed the book, and not that I don't often learn things, but I just had no idea. I feel like I just had no idea that there was this network of female spies during World War One. So I thought that was really interesting. So if you are into historical fiction, specifically World War II, I would totally recommend this book. But also if like female friendship is your genre, this I also would recommend because, or like adventure because, I mean not like adventure in the sense of like swashbuckling sword fighting, but they are going around, they are like tracking clues. I would totally recommend it if you're into historical fiction, if you're into like female friendship, if you're into adventure. It was a good book. I rated it 4.25 stars. I really liked it. To be totally honest, if I had been more awake when I finished the book, I might have rated it even higher. I really liked the end. I just felt a little flat during the like climax of the story. But like I said, I would definitely recommend it. It was a really good read, and it's much lighter and easier than All the Light We Cannot See. Okay, so literally yesterday, nope, just kidding, like an hour ago, I finished The Last Man by Jane Harper. This book came out earlier this year and has 4.2 stars on Goodreads, and this is the official review. "There at the Stockman's grave, a landmark so old no one can remember who was buried there. But today the scant shadow it casts was the last hope for the middle brother, Cameron. The Bright's family quiet existence is thrown into grief and anguish. Something had been troubling Cameron. Did he lose hope and walk to his death? Because if he didn't, the isolation of the outback leaves few suspects. Dark, suspenseful, and deeply atmospheric, The Last Man is the highly anticipated next book from the best-selling and award-winning Jane Harper, author of The Dry and Force of Nature." So if you've been following or listening to any previous episodes, this is Jane Harper's third book, and I've read all three of them. As this review mentions, or the Goodreads review mentions, her other two books are The Dry and Force of Nature. The Dry was the first book of hers that I read, where someone is killed during a drought in a small town, and they solve the murder. And then Force of Nature, I read, I want to say sometime in 2018 or maybe even early 2019, but it's like a company retreat, and they go like hiking or backpacking out in like this retreat area, and someone ends up murdered, and they have to figure out who. So her genre is kind of like crime/thriller. But I really like them. They're all like mid-length books, like 300 to 400 pages, and they are really easy and fast reads. And also, I will caution you, whenever I read one of her books and I get to like 60 to 70% through, like I basically just want to stop talking to people and finish it. She has always like a lot of like threads that she throws out, I feel like, for the first like 2/3 of the book, and then like quickly connects and closes them up in the last third. So once I've gotten like I said, like 60 to 70%, I'm like, can you all just please stop talking to me? I gotta finish this book. So I really enjoy the books that she writes. This is the third one, so I'm kind of out of luck until she writes another book. But if thriller or crime is your bag, then I think you would enjoy this book. So basically the story is, it starts with a family, three brothers. The middle brother at the beginning has died. And there's no, like, nobody really knows what happened. And so the book basically follows the family as they try to figure out what happened to the middle brother. But the older brother, Nathan, is really the main character. And he's the one who kind of, not necessarily like leads the investigation, but we kind of follow him the most. And he is trying to figure out how his brother died or what caused him to die. The book takes place in the Australian outback. Pretty sure it's Australia. The family owns a cattle farm. So it's like this giant expanse of land, which is a main part of the book. And It's also like the landscape is also, or the setting is also really integral in her two other books as well. So like I said, the book centers around the death of the middle brother and kind of how the family, its effect on the family in the aftermath. And I really like all of her books. Like I said, it's like crime slash thriller. So if that's your genre, you'll totally like it. I read it in like 3 or 4 days. But if you had like older kids who maybe needed less from you or no kids at all, you could probably finish it in like a weekend. Or if you were very motivated, perhaps even a day. Her books are, like I said, her books are really good and they definitely draw you in right away. I would definitely, if you are interested in like if crime slash thriller is your genre, I would totally recommend this. Also, there's a nice like introspective aspect to this as well. Like the main character, you don't really get it until the book is wrapping up towards the end, like in the last like 20 to 30%. But the main character, like kind of also, he's been isolated and withdrawn, and he kind of like through his like investigating his younger brother's death, kind of like loops back to his family, which is a nice also side effect slash happy ending. And you guys know how I feel about a happy ending. I just want everybody to feel great at the end of a book. And while the ending I felt was a touch abrupt, it was positive, and I felt like all of the characters were like on the up and up, and I felt like most everything was resolved. So I would for sure recommend The Last Man. However, I would also recommend having some time to dedicate to reading it. So also in the last month or so, I've read Educated, and which is a memoir by Tara Westover. It was not the most recent book I read. I want to say I read this maybe like around Labor Day. But not super important. It has about 4.5 stars on Goodreads, and this is the official review. Tara Westover was 17 the first time she set foot in a classroom. Born to survivalists in the mountains of Idaho, she prepared for the end of the world by stockpiling home canned peaches and sleeping with her head for the hills bag. In the summer, she stewed herbs for her mother, a midwife and healer, and in the winter, she salvaged in her father's junkyard. Her father forbade hospitals, so Tara never saw a doctor or nurse. Gashes and concussions, even burns from explosions, were all treated at home with herbalism. The family was so isolated from mainstream society that there was no one to ensure the children received an education and no one to intervene when one of Tara's older brothers became violent. Then, lacking any formal education, Tara began to educate herself. She taught herself enough mathematics and grammar to be admitted to Brigham Young University, where she studied history, learning for the first time about important world events like the Holocaust and the Civil Rights Movement. Her quest for knowledge transformed her, taking her over oceans and across continents to Harvard and to Cambridge. Only then would she wonder if she had traveled too far, if there was still a way home. Educated is an account of the struggle for self-invention. It is a tale of fierce family loyalty and of the grief that comes with severing the closest of ties. With the acute insight that distinguishes all great writers, Westover has crafted a universal coming-of-age story that gets to the heart of what an education is and what it offers, the perspective to see one's life through new eyes and the will to change it. I had been hearing about Educated for a while. It had been popped up in book groups that I'm part of. It had popped up on Instagram from other people I follow, like who review books. So I had been waiting to read this book for a really long time, and I was excited when it finally came up. And I have to say that I did really enjoy it. The story is so outlandish at times that it's hard to it, that sometimes it's hard to remember it's a memoir and that all of these things happened. It's just like when you read about some of these things, you're like, how can no one else have known that this was going on, and how could people have felt like this these were the good and right choices to make? There was a time in the book, and I understand why, like I'm not, but there was a time in the book when she's in school, where I just kind of wanted to like shake her and just be like, come on, Tara, like get on with it. Like, so there were a couple points, but I also understand like she didn't have a lot of close friends who I think that it seems that there were not a lot of close friends, that she didn't have a lot of close friends. And so I think that probably there wasn't really anyone in her life who could offer her that perspective. But like as a reader, reading about it after the fact, I was like, there's a big chunk of the book, I would say maybe from her time like after BYU until almost the end of the book where, or I guess maybe until I think it's her grandmother dies towards the end of her memoir. But from the time, I would say like after she leaves BYU until she returns home for this family funeral, where there are just several events where I just kind of wanted, you know how you have a friend and you just kind of want to like shake them and be like, hey, get it together. Like get your head out of your butt. Like move on. How can I help you? Like that's sort of just how I felt as I was reading it. I was like, ah, come on. Like we are better than this. Let's do something about it. But it's obviously a novel. It's not a novel. It's a memoir. And all of these things have already happened. So there's no benefit to that. But I enjoyed it. It, like I said, it was hard at times to remember that it was a memoir. So all of these things really did happen. And I will also totally admit that I frequently / casually will just Google her now because I'm fascinated by the story because sometimes I forget that like people can be so unreasonable. And also because when she talks about, so her mom dabbles at the beginning of her memoir, like when she was younger, her mom has kind of dabbled in, a bunch. She was a midwife and then sort of dabbled in creating like essential oils and different like herbal remedies basically for people in their town / community. And then towards the end when she's in college and beyond, her mom's business like super takes off, and that also really interested me too. So I've been Googling them on and off low-key just because like the whole concept fascinates me. And there's a, like, it ends up as, with, like, an interesting split in the family. But I would, if you're into memoir, if you are into education, if you are, I think that this book is super interesting on a lot of different levels. For the level of, like, introspection, I mean, I always think, like, whenever I read a really interesting memoir, I'm always like, what would it be like if I wrote a memoir? I feel like nothing important or remarkable has ever happened in my life. And secondly, like, how do people even remember with such detail what happened to them like 20 years ago? I assume these are people who journal more than me. But I do also always find that interesting when people can recall events of the past with like super vivid detail. I also will say what I've noticed in this book, which I thought was interesting and not true. Like I've never noticed this before in other memoirs that I've read, but there are a few different spots where she will like recount an event. And then at the end of the chapter, she'll say later, she'll like, there will be little asterisks. And then at the end, she'll be like, one person I talked to doesn't remember this version, or she'll say like a brother thought the sequence of events was different or something. So I thought that was really interesting as well. So like, not, I mean, she is recalling much more than I think I ever would about my own life in really vivid detail. But then there are also times where she's admitting like, this is the memory that I have, but other people don't have this same memory. So overall, I would say definitely this book is super interesting. And if you're into nonfiction, memoir, biography, I would definitely definitely encourage you to read it. It is a very interesting book. And like I said, sometimes it's so outlandish that you forget that it's a memoir. But it wasn't, like, I didn't blow through it. But it also, it didn't, like, weigh me down. I think I probably finished it in like a week or two because I was reading it when we were traveling and when I was also teaching. So it took a little bit longer, but like I said, it was a really good book. And if I would recommend it to people of multiple genre types. Honestly, if you guys stuck with me this long, I feel like you should get some type of prize, like some guacamole or like a latte or something. Don't, not together though, those wouldn't be good together, but those would both be things that I would consider a prize. I am currently reading, like literally just started today, The Hate U Give, and I'm super super excited to read it. So that will definitely be coming in November. And I think I finally got Where the Crawdads Sing. So hopefully that should be coming in November as well. And as always, I'd love to hear from you if you have any book recommendations, or I'd love to hear your opinion on books that I've also read and reviewed. All right, y'all. See you on the third Thursday in November. Keep reading.